is Mona.
Thank you very much. My name's Mona, I'm an addict. And, yeah. Drugs weren't a problem for me, I was the problem. And it took me a long time to realise that. Drugs, I thought, were the solution for a while. I was having a conversation with somebody just before the meeting. I have this belief that most people in society, civilians, also have addictive tendencies. And I look at everybody that I meet on the street and I apply the, you know, what I learn here and think if it can help somebody else, then it can help them. I think it's just a blessing that we have this fellowship, but there are still people out there that really struggle with life that just, if they could just have just an insight of what we have, it will benefit them as well. I'm coming up to being 5 years on May the 23rd. And so I'd like to share, I guess, coming up to 5 years, how I managed to stay clean for 5 years. Not so much of the life story. I'm very good at going to tangents. I try not to. I'll give you a few little insights. Okay, where my addiction took me. My addiction took me to having to lie in a red-hot bath every day until my veins would come up, and then having my partner at the time inject me, after he'd injected himself with speedballs, come and give me my hit, which would be absolutely painful, and I wouldn't care. I just wanted that hit inside of me. And the consequences to that kind of behaviour was I've scars, my veins collapsed. I'm HIV positive now, which affected my health for a long time. But being in recovery, that the advantages of being in recovery is now I'm not that self-piteous, I'm HIV positive. I now can take responsibility of my life and I'm very healthy. And through eating very, very healthily and doing this stuff, my CD4, which are your white blood cells, has gone up to 1,100, which is most probably a lot higher than most people in here, which is bloody good, really. So that, from doing this and learning to love myself, the consequences of my addiction, I managed to make a difference and make the changes. Okay, that's just one example. Another example, when I was a child, I thought I was going to meet Mr. Perfect or Mrs. Perfect. I didn't know at the time. And we were going to live in a nice cottage after travelling around the world, but overlooking the sea and live happily ever after. I was going to be really, really famous and everybody was going to love me. On the telly, either a film star or a pop star or something like that. But that was socially programmed into me from spending too much time in front of a television as a child. You know, and the reality, you know, I always ended up in really abusive, destructive relationships because that's what I was used to. And I had such low self-esteem that I thought that I couldn't get better than that. All of my relationships were... I was with somebody for 15 years who was an addict, and I was in so much denial about it and my own addiction. And first time I met his parents in Spain, I swallowed lots of white lightning acid, and I was stripped off naked and jumped in the sea, and he had to carry me in to meet his parents. That was first impression. And I fell pregnant when we had time that we split up, and he told me that he wanted time away from me. And in that time, I decided to look for somebody else. And I slept with somebody else, and I fell pregnant, got back together with my partner. So that wasn't the sort of happy cottage life that I'd envisioned. Now, the solution in recovery, you know, once to get recovery, I had to step away from that relationship. I had to put my daughter into care, and that was me working a step one and surrender. That, you know, that prayer, I remember that moment when I asked for help, and that's why this has worked for me for 5 years, nearly 5 years. I was on my hands and knees, I was in psychosis, thinking that my downstairs neighbours were going to come and shoot me because they were playing around with a gun. They shot a water pipe and burst the pipe, and they didn't report it to the housing association because, you know, you can't really phone them up and say, oh, that's the people I was living above. And I really believed that they were going to come and kill me. But most of it was like the amount of fear that I was living in, being in psychosis because I was smoking crack, didn't help. And social services got involved. Now, that was the blessing. You know, like how things happen for a reason. At the time, you think, oh, my God, how could this be happening to me? And then a little bit further on down the line, you look back and you say, God, if that hadn't happened, that wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have learnt that and that and that. Well, for me, that's what my early recovery was about, and getting me into treatment. My neighbours complained. Social services got involved, rightly so, because I couldn't take care of my daughter. I couldn't even take care of myself. And I had to give my daughter to social services. And for me, it was always... I was brought up in care. I was brought up with the care system. And I was terrified of the care system, you know. But I had to have trust that I could look after my daughter. And I was doing so much damage within that relationship. And I had to break a cycle. So my daughter went into care and I went into treatment. And I stepped away from a 15-year codependent relationship. And for me, you know, that was just a completely flattening me down to ground zero. I made myself so vulnerable. And when I was in a treatment centre, I was so raw. And there were a lot of people in this treatment centre. I was blessed that I had the treatment centre. I was really, really blessed, and it was 12-step. But there were a lot of people there that still had the full metal jacket. They had to go into treatment for whatever reason. There were a lot of people that were... You know, there were a couple of doctors there. They weren't really alcoholics or they weren't really addicts. They were there because their job told them that they had to sort themselves out a little bit and so forth. But I was there because I knew that I couldn't, for years and years, as long as I can remember, I could not feel feelings. I couldn't deal with feeling feelings from a very young age, you know, even if it meant for me excitement, climbing out of the bedroom window, climbing over the roof and coming in the other window and getting off on that buzz, attention seeking at school, you know, getting all the attention, feeding off that energy to take my mind away from how I really felt inside. You know, it works on so many different levels. I didn't want to feel the low self-esteem and the pain that I was feeling, and I'd do anything. And also, as a child, I think I understood quite a lot, but I couldn't articulate it. Being in care, a lot of the experiences that I experienced, I didn't have the words, and I didn't have people that would sit me down and listen and go through the process. Experiencing trauma and living most of my childhood in post-traumatic stress syndrome, where I would just shut down. I'd smell something and it would push me down, and I'd be shut down for years and years and years until I discovered alcohol and then the party scene, and then I just escalated. I'm not even going to mention all of the mood-altering substances. But it took me to that day when I had to hand over my daughter. I ended up in treatment and I was in pieces. I was in so much pain. And all I could think about was, I've got to do everything to get my daughter back. I couldn't do it for myself. I didn't love myself enough to do it for myself. So I did it for my daughter. She's my angel. I wouldn't call her that at the minute because she's a teenager. She drives me insane. It's bloody hard work. But she was my angel. She saved me. And I got myself through treatment. I remember early days when I was first without any substance inside of me, because you know, I've been taking methadone for years as well, and I was on a massive pharmaceutical prescription. And I really believed, for years, I believed that if I stopped smoking crack and heroin and I just took Valium, dihydrocodone, and drink booze, I was clean. I really believed that in my head. Or if I just went to Spain for 2 weeks on holiday and I stopped taking heroin and crack, I could just drink myself silly and I was clean. And I'd come back and say, oh, you're looking really healthy. Yes, I haven't used for 2 weeks. You know, I just didn't understand. And it was only in the 12-step treatment centre where we were told, you know, about abstinence. I'd never heard that word before. It was a new word to me. Well, I can't take anything. I just thought I was going to go away to this big country house for 6 weeks, and then I'll be able to come back and I'll be able to go to the pub again. And I'll be able to drink. And I was looking forward to it. And I'll be able to go to parties at the weekends again. As long as I stayed away from the crack, I was okay. I could go to a party and I could go out raving. And I was like, wow. That did not happen, because once everything was out of my system, I went into psychosis. Because I remembered all that stuff that I'd suppressed for years and years and years and years. And they told me to write my life story. Well, all of that pain of that childhood stuff that I'd locked away for years and years, I had to write it down, and I went into psychosis, and I was put on respirotone, because I was just so insane and I was so afraid, which I came off of. I was, it was as if I was in a, I was meditating in my secondary and I could just feel acknowledged. I could just feel like I was in a bubble and I knew that I was experiencing stuff in my head, I can understand, but I wasn't processing it emotionally or spiritually. So I came off this. It was right for me. I'm not saying it's right for everybody, but for me, that's when I let go of a lot of fear and I started to listen to my higher power, my higher level of consciousness. And recovery for me, it was a blessing that I went to a 12-step treatment centre and learned and went to a meeting and heard people share what I couldn't express in words. And it was a blessing, I guess, that my, you know, that I had to get my daughter back, and I did everything. I jumped through hoops. And that kept me clean. I went to meetings. I had to sit at meetings with the doctor, with the social worker, with the therapists. You know, once a month, these meetings, and they will assess whether I was ready to have my daughter back. And I hated it at the time, but now I look back at it, and, you know, it gave me the kick up the bum that I really needed. And now, in recovery, what I've done, I can't believe I'm coming up to 5 years. And in the 5 years, how I changed. At the beginning, I just thought I was mentally ill. Which I am, you know, with the disease of addiction. But I just thought, I'd see people that like 5 years, 10 years, even 1 year or 6 months. I think, how do you do it? I don't understand. How do you do it? And what I've learned is just one day at a time. And living in the moment, appreciating the moment. This moment is connected to everything. We're all connected and it's wonderful. That for me was like reaching another level of consciousness completely. Realising that it's not about all the stuff that's happened in the past, all the stuff that's going to happen in the future. It's about being now and being happy and connected to this moment. And that is so freeing. And letting go of all the stuff from the past and to look forward to what's going to happen in the future instead of fearing it. And in early days, I was so afraid. Am I going to have a roof over my head? Am I going to have friends? All of that kind of stuff. And another thing that I learned was, you know, somebody's going to have to remind me after. Were you judging your insides on other people's outsides? With me, I've learned that we're all equal. Everybody, regardless of your race, your gender, all of that nonsense that we're socially programmed to believe, just because you've got a couple of million in the bank, you're better than somebody sat out there on the street asking for money. We're all equal. And that was something that's totally freeing. And that's something that gave me confidence and gave me the ability to learn to not only love others, but love myself. Because only through learning to love myself have I got love to love others. And that, in early days, I learned. And that's something that helps me to connect and to communicate with people. It was really difficult right at the beginning, learning to speak out, to share and to connect with others and pick up the phone. But once I got over that, you know, that we're all the same, really, regardless of where we're coming, you know, where we've been or our experiences, we're all the same. You know, having this experience called life. And today, I just came back from another family funeral yesterday. And it was very painful, and I felt it. I'm really feeling that grief and that loss. I've been to, this will be the 7th death since December, 3 family members, and it's painful, but I can stay clean through it. When I was in early days, my mother died when I was 3 weeks clean, which was very, very difficult, but I stayed clean because I listened to my... I think I listened to a higher level of consciousness which guided me instead of my head, and it kept me clean. And the love as well, the love in the rooms of allowing to be myself to be loved, which I didn't do before. I couldn't deal with intimacy. My gosh. And now, you know, I'm in a loving relationship with somebody. I never thought that would happen. You know, 4 years. It took me 4 years of recovery before I was ready. That was four years of abstinence from relationships, men, for me. And I've got a loving relationship. I've got a roof over my head. I've got food in the fridge. I've got loving people in my life. I've got recovery. And now I look for the things... I'm grateful for the things I have, not the things that I haven't got. And that's, I think, something that makes me more content with my life. And... I wouldn't have any of that stuff if it wasn't for... I couldn't do this without the fellowship. I can't imagine staying clean without being reminded. If I don't go to regular meetings, I go so crazy in my head. The stuff that circulates my head that I start to believe in. And for me, it's just like connecting. For me, I come to a meeting and I connect with me. I'm an energy being. I connect. For me, it's energy. I connect with everybody else's energy and with love. And that's what, for me, that spiritual connection that's in the room that I connect with, which I need. And I normally hear, if I'm in a meeting and I really need to share something, and I'm waiting, if it's one of those hand-up jobbies, and I'm waiting for ages, choose me, I really need to share. And then you can always guarantee how my high power works. The person right before me shares everything that I needed to share, and then my head goes, and I think that's the way of just learning to let go. Synchronicities and really, really, really believing that this stuff works. If you're new, you know, what I learned to do is just keep do those 1990s, get to speak to people. When you hear somebody share something that you connect with, go and talk to that person after the meeting. And get yourself a sponsor. Share every meeting, if you can go to a meeting that shares, so that you are connecting with people. And I think it's that the step two stuff is learning to do things differently. Learning to change and not being afraid, letting go of fear. We get two choices in life, as Bill Hicks said. We can choose love or we can choose fear. And I choose love. Thank you very much.